Richie Allen here, glad to be here, presenter of the Richie Allen Show, Monday to Thursday, 5 p.m. Currently off air temporarily, not for long, due to a technical glitch with something called a core unit, which is like a server for digital broadcast consoles. Something went wrong with it, and it's unfortunate, and I can't do anything until it is repaired and returned.
Can't
to
you
me.
Just plug a new one in?
No, don't you start. No, I'm not the BBC. I don't have two, three studios, production studios and stuff like that. So I have what I have. I mean, I could go a very rudimentary way, but I've always been somebody who's been incredibly precious about production values and sound. So I just won't do that. Like, the show spent a lot of money on the studio that it currently has. It's very good. The company AEQ is a world leader in radio broadcasting facilities. And it's just unlucky, 3 years into my kind of journey with this particular broadcast console, we've just had a little bit of a glitch, and it's just one of those things.
So you haven't been hacked. That's what everyone's
thinking. Oh, God, no,
thinking.
No.
Look, I mean, the thing is, this, what we're doing is incredibly fragile, really, in a way, Richie, isn't
it?
Because it could be at any moment. Anybody, GCHQ, obviously it would be the Russians doing it. That's could go just like that. The old days of FM transmitters, that was a little bit more difficult to stop, or even long wave transmitters. But the internet's quite vulnerable, which is why I'm quite interested maybe to talk here today about the role of this sort of live talk radio sort of thing that we do. In getting information out, because this is, it seems to me, in a way, is becoming the front line. As the West is hemmed in various different directions militarily by the Chinese, the Russians, et cetera, people getting onto them, they don't really want to do deals with them anymore. They don't see them as honest brokers. So that battle has been transferred, it seems to me, to the airwaves.
Yes, and we are very vulnerable. I mean, I've bored my listeners to death for about 5 years, warning them of a looming threat to what it is we do, which is what we're doing right now, broadcasting online, which is where we have to do it. It's where everybody does it now. FM is pretty much dead, and it is very vulnerable. It's vulnerable because we're dependent. We are depending on, well, external help all the time. We exist on servers, mostly on other people's servers. We use streaming services. I use a third-party service to manufacture and distribute my own app, because I have an app where people listen to my program. And I have no doubt that in the near future, it's going to be squeezed. It's going to become more and more difficult to do what it is we do. There's no doubt about that. You know,
it can be shut down just like that, really. I mean, these people are pros, the cyber warfare types. We've got a massive organization at Cheltenham that I was just hearing this week maybe actually runs the country. It's called GCHQ. It used to be Bletchley Park. In the States, it's the National Security Agency. So, I mean, we have to just cross our fingers sometimes and hope that there's decent people in these organizations that can see what we can see, which is the rot, particularly in the Western elite, who seem to be trying to kick off wars. But anyway, look, we're here to talk about what's really in the news. We've had the budget this week, which is one of the most tragic travesties I've ever seen. This idea that we're not going to increase income tax, but I tell you what, we're going to start pushing those thresholds down and down, down the line.
Yeah.
More and more and more people are being pushed up into medium and higher rates of paying income tax. And then, of course, once they've got their money and they've spent it on something, maybe bought a house or a car, that those are all going to be taxed, the inheritance tax on the houses, et cetera, et cetera. So we're being really squeezed down the money that, you know, every as when you buy something that's taxed, when anyway, so look, the point here I'm coming to eventually, hopefully, is that the finance correspondent, I get more and more irritated, Richie. It'd be great to hear your views on the finance correspondents from London. You know, the TV people, the Faisal Islam types, the Ben Chus, who've built a career on explaining what's going on financially. They seem to me to be just total tools now of the Bank of England, the Treasury and the City of London.
One of the things I used to do during my many years of working in commercial radio and national radio was I was often asked to explain this stuff to listeners, because for some reason I was able to kind of grasp what was being said and what it meant. that's not to big myself up. Most of the time, I don't have a clue what's going on. But when it comes to financial services, when it comes to the economy and taxation, yeah, I've got a kind of an idea. And I certainly have an idea in terms of what I believe to be happening right now. So this budget, right? So we knew before the announcement of the budget, it was trailed for weeks on end, right? What did we know, people like you and me? Well, we knew that no chancellor could make any meaningful cuts to spending, not in reality. Why? Because around about three quarters of spending at the moment is already locked into things like pensions and benefits. That's 75%. There's very little you can do to any of that, meaning that Reeves, and this is if we believe Reeves is in charge, of course, you know, I don't. You can take that on if you like. Of course, this is your show, or maybe we'll leave that for another day. I don't believe any of these people are in charge. They do what they're told and they say what they're told to say. So what does it mean? It means, as far as I understand it, there is hardly any room for manoeuvre at all in terms of making savings through cutting spending. So what does that mean? If you can't save through cutting spending, it means that tax rises are an inevitability, right? So we said last July when we butted heads before the election, this notion of protecting working people was an absolute nonsense, because governments over the last 20 years, and the media you just mentioned, by the way, have deliberately kept hidden from people the true scale of the financial liabilities, like the public sector pensions and so on, right? And benefits and all of that. So ultimately, the UK and most Western democracies, you might argue, Tony, or I would argue anyway, they've become hooked on borrowing and unsustainable borrowing. And at the moment, and funnily enough, before my technical mishap, I've been speaking quite a bit about this on the programme. UK debt is now nearly 100% of GDP. And before Reeves' budget, the tax burden was at a post-war high, Tony, I think. And at the same time, core public services, vital public services, NHS, et cetera, are still crumbling. Mutual friend of ours, John Perkins, who wrote Confessions of an Economic Hitman, he would describe this as the death economy. You can't tax your way to growth. You can't. So I believe, oh, and by the way, at the same time, artificial intelligence is going to do more white collar jobs than even we could imagine, meaning that where will tax revenues come from in the future? So this is massive. And I believe it's all part of a horrible authoritarian dystopian plan to transform us from the financial system that we understand at the moment, fractional reserve banking, into something completely different. That's what, and something incredibly controlled, namely central bank digital currencies, universal basic incomes to keep people quiet and to pacify them when everything goes belly up, as I have no doubt it will. Yeah, in a nutshell, that's where I see it.
This thing called programmable money as well, which is sitting there waiting to go. So the idea, it seems to me, should be to crash things. You know, they know that there's going to be a crash at some point, so that's what they're going to do. But anyway, look, from trying to say something positive, this is what these London Finance, Bank of England, City of London stooges, they're public relations people for the city, and this weird thing, you know, the Guildhall. By the way, Sam William has been doing some brilliant things I've seen online recently, wandering around places like the Bank of England, Temple in London, looking at all the occult symbolism. Nobody else has been really, I think, pulling that apart as humorously as he's been doing. So the things they could do, what could they do that they're not talking about? This is the taboos. These are things, I think, Richie, things that you and I are interested in. Let's just break a couple of taboos. Let's say renationalise all the things which were nationalised by Margaret Thatcher in the 1980s, the infrastructure of the country, because all of this is being used to really screw us down, whether it's rail fares, the cost of living crisis, gas, electricity, water,
utilities,
water. So that's the first thing. And by the way, it's not a difficult thing to do. What you do is you just regulate the private businesses into the ground, so they can't make money, and then it falls back into the hands, so you don't have to pay a penny for it. So Rachel Reeves and the Treasury don't even need to get involved in that one. But secondly, the Bank of England can print money. They should print money. And why on earth don't they print money? If they want to spend, Farage pointed this out, right, earlier this year. He said all this money that we're paying interest on, that isn't it the 3 trillion debt, this we don't need to be paying interest at all. If we print money from the Bank of England, pay off that debt, and then just repay the money back to the Bank of England at zero interest. He pointed this out. The Bank of England immediately said, no, you can't do that. So it's interesting that Farage, for all his evils, is coming out with some of these taboo breaking things. The other taboo he broke, of course, last year was saying that NATO provoked Russia to invade Ukraine. And we've seen just over the last few days, the fallback and the comeback for that is that his Welsh leader has been jailed for 10 years, I
That's
believe it
right.
is, for taking
Spying,
money from
effectively.
Russia. Now, of course, if this was a principle, which of course it isn't, how many people, Richie, in London would be in jail for taking money for Israel, I wonder?
The population of London would be reduced at the speed of light, wouldn't it, if that was the case? Yeah, it's a very interesting story, that. And Farage is a very interesting character. For me, and I know you disagree with this, but that's fine. Farage is typical of the. Well, he's a typical populist, isn't he? He's a typical populist rabble-rouser, I would say, who has the luxury of a 3.5, 4 year lead into an election whereby he can promise the world the moon and the stars, Tony. But like pretty much every other populist, including the most famous of them all or the most infamous of them all, Donald Trump, they deliver nothing once they eventually. I do believe reform, despite the attacks on Farage at the moment, which are fairly ridiculous, these attacks about things he's supposedly said
Well,
to
yeah,
fellow
but that was
students
very
50 years
important
ago.
timing, Richie. I think that was just exactly as the budget is released. So the whole Farage thing is dominated by these. And I was listening to the coverage of
Fair
that.
enough. I know
Hang
what you're
on,
saying.
this
I'm not
is just
necessarily what he's saying.
allegations. There's somebody
I
here.
get
Who
it.
the hell are they? These allegations have not been tested at all. They didn't name the people. They said on the bulletin, I think it was
Well, they have
something.
done now. They have
Yeah,
done
they.
now. They've named one specific guy. He's a
There's one
filmmaker, isn't
guy,
he?
but they're saying, oh, the reason we're running this is because the other people have backed it up, but they're not saying who they are. So this to me smacks of a psyop to completely kick Farage out of any of the budget discussions.
Yeah, you could very well be right, mate. Yeah, look, I'm not going to argue with that because it is fairly plausible. I'm not stubborn. I still wouldn't change my mind on if Farage was to avoid any scandal at all and form part of the next government as a coalition. For me, it wouldn't make any difference. And you know this because you've been a guest on my shows for over a decade, going back to my days in Spain. Dominic Cummings hinted at this stuff amazingly a year or so ago when he said, look, they don't have really any power. The real power lies in the hands of the civil servants and the think tanks and other actors and parties.
No, hang on, because they do have power. It's just that they choose not to use it. I mean, I've been on the boards of big organizations, sort of multi-million pound businesses, where you're sitting around a board table and you can tell, you go around the room and you can pick out at least four or five of the people around the room who don't actually give a damn about the people that are at the bottom of the pyramid that they're managing. All they want to do is get to the end of the meeting quickly and have some sandwiches. And it actually what we need is people running organizations that actually do think and care
Yeah, but
about
we've
what they're
always, hang
doing.
on, we've always disagreed on this, and I think we always will. Elected governments do not have any power whatsoever. The proof of the pudding is not even in the eating. It should be self-evident to everybody who observes or participates in politics or geopolitics. They don't have any power. Look at the Labour manifesto last year. Look at the manifestos of the previous prime ministers, whether it be, forget Liz Truss, whether it be Sunak, going back before Sunak Johnson, before that you had Theresa May. The realities in terms of what governments actually do as opposed to the black and white text of the manifestos. They couldn't be any further apart. And that is because when elected governments take office, it is made abundantly clear to them very early on from the civil servants who've been running their departments forever. No, you won't be doing any of that which you promised your constituents or
what happens
your members.
When you've got a politician who immediately says, "Oi, you," right, it's when someone tells them that, you're sacked.
Assassination.
Because we do
assassination
have, well,
or disgrace.
Maybe. And I think a lot of people like Trump, for example, maybe Farage too, are quite aware that they could be bumped off, but they're prepared to actually put their lives on the line, maybe. And so this is a big ask from anybody, which is why we've got, I think, a crisis in politics. We need people of character in those positions who are prepared to actually lead.
I think what's coming down the line, if you're going to allow me say so, I know you will, because I do reciprocate on my show. I think what's coming, Tony, and it's been planned, I believe, for a long time, and I say this of my own volition. It isn't because I've read anybody or because I have been seduced by anybody else's way of thinking. I've been looking at this for years. We're seeing, I think we're seeing not a sudden collapse like the manufactured banking crises of 2008 and beyond, but we're seeing a gradual reconfiguration of the financial system from analog to digital. And this has been managed in a number of different ways. Perma crises in terms of international politics, wars in Ukraine and elsewhere, certainly. But also, I think what we're seeing is, so finance at the moment, you're going to argue with this, fair enough. Up to a point, it is decentralized, up to a point at the moment, right? Mostly, right? Because we have merchant banks, we have commercial banks, we obviously have cash, thank God, at the moment.
Well,
and
quite
we
a few
have,
people have their own assets and wealth, which is what the
they
things
do.
Are
they do, and you have and market forces. So that's how it is now. But it's moving to, you said it earlier on yourself, to a centralized and programmable financial system, moving away from the individual choice of somebody like you, me, our partners, our friends, to kind of state managed economic participation. That's where we're going. Do you know what they'll call it in years to come, long after we're dead? They'll call it the beginning of digital feudalism. That's where we're going now. I really believe this. I've never been more passionate about anything else. I've been looking at this for years. And do you know what I think is coming? And you're going to jump all over this. In about 3 or 4 or 5 years' time, maybe I'm talking bull, right? Maybe it'll be 5, 6 years' time. We're going to have a national emergency announcement, like we did in March of 2020, when Johnson addressed the nation and said, we're going to have to stay home for 3 weeks to flatten the curve. We know what happened after that. A prime minister in the future is going to address the nation and is going to say, we can no longer pay the bills. We can no longer pay the bills, right? They're going to say that debt interest, or paying down this debt interest, is consuming more of the budget than actual public services. They're going to say tax receipts have flatlined because of stagnation, they will say, because AI has taken up more and more and more jobs and more people are going to be out of work. People will resist. I believe there will be civil unrest. They will resist tax rises, the tax rises that will be announced because of what I've just said, because of stagnation and recession. And I think a future government will say, this welfare state is financially unsustainable. We'll need radical reform. And I think, Tony, it'll be like the UK's Lehman Brothers moment. Not a bank collapse, but a societal economic collapse. They will announce it. They will say, this is it. We're going to have to move on to a new way of distributing and managing money. And that's when I think, I mean, we're seeing it already. NHS waiting lists, crumbling local services. We can't manage the court systems anymore. We've got to move to jury-less trials, legal system delays, council bankruptcies, Tony, which we've spoken about, you and me, on my show, like Birmingham. They will not be able to find the extra money, and that's when they will attempt to transfer us over to a completely digital financial system. I know it sounds awful. I know you like to look for something a bit positive, particularly on a Friday. But I can't see any way out of it, Tony. I really can't.
Well, maybe not. I mean, maybe war as well. I mean, this is one of those things. Although I do wonder whether many of these things are there almost like a sort of behemoth in the corner to frighten us, or bogeyman, you know, and that fear is one of the big motivations out there. But look, we've also had, haven't we, the announcement that the French are now going to bring in a form of national service, and
Voluntary,
induce
yeah.
military training. So it's not a kind of conscription thing. But do
No.
you know what? I think this is actually going to be popular in France because of the financial situation the way it is. For a lot of people, young people, they can't see much of a future. France, I think, is a bit better than the UK, but particularly with the student debt here, a lot of youngsters will be thinking, you know, if they were to do that in the UK, there'd be a lot of them are thinking, I'd much rather go and do a little bit of innocuous training in the army, so long as I'm not actually going to risk my life fighting Russia or something. And so it seems to me they've created the perfect conditions amongst young people, certainly here, likely in France too, where that they will embrace something like this, and it actually maybe even might do them good.
Maybe. Yeah, it's interesting that it's been they've gone to great pains. You know, my you've met her. Better half is French, so she's following this with great interest. It's been about 30 years since National Military Service ended in France. I think you're right. It seems to be going down either well or either meh. You know, there doesn't seem to be any massive opposition to it in France, so long as it's voluntary. I mean, so the next question is that something that you think a Labour, maybe not a Labour government, but maybe the next government, maybe a Conservative government or a Conservative Reform coalition might think about introducing here?
Well, they've
It's
already
really
been
interesting.
talking about it to
They've been
do
talking
with
about it, yeah.
bringing it in to deal with the Russian threat, so-called threat.
Yeah. The phantom Russian threat. Makes me laugh, this idea that Russia, I mean, the constant talking about cyber warfare and hacking as if we're not doing it to every other country in the world as well. I mean, it must be just one big game among spooks. This is your area of expertise. You know far more about it than I do because you've researched several books on these subjects. But yeah, this holier than thou approach by UK politicians to what Russia might be doing, give me a break. Again, as if the UK doesn't have spies planted in Iran, in North Korea, in Russia and elsewhere, you know. Yeah, I don't know what else to
Well,
say about that,
look,
yeah.
how I don't know if you've come across this story. I only came across it today. This guy, CJ Hopkins, he's, I think, an American based in Germany. He's come out with a lot of, he's actually just, I think, been raided by the German police for apparently pro-Nazi views. Well, what he's doing, actually, he's saying is that the German government, by its aggression towards Russia and also by its COVID measures, is it becoming very much like a Nazi regime. This is what he's been saying in this latest book of his. He was, I think, raided first because he put some information up on Twitter about it. So what he's saying is that the government now is a Nazi government, or it's becoming a Nazified government. It's a resurgence of the Nazis. Which a lot of people would agree with, but well, I certainly would. You're looking at, if I'm looking at trying to rekindle World War II on the Eastern Front, which is what they appear to be doing, and these, the very draconian lockdowns that most of the German citizens, didn't really question too much. They just went along with it because that's what they like. And what he's pointing out is he's saying, well, actually, you're using this term Nazi all the time to describe Alternative for Deutschland, who, by the way, are a Farageist type party over in Germany. And not only that, their candidates and their politicians are dying at a rate of knots. I think we're up to 11 now, have died in peculiar circumstances. It's difficult to know whether it's a natural death or not. It's generally the older ones that have been dying off. And I suppose conservatives die too, but the Alternative for Deutschland is saying we're losing our people. We're not even sure why. So I wonder what you make of this. It almost as if what you've got is a very powerful super state in Brussels that is almost it's like Brexit here. You know, everybody in Europe, the Frexit, the yellow vests who wanted to get out of the EU, for example, they've had enough of it and they want their countries back as some sort of sovereign state. So when they're voting for their MPs, they're actually, those are the people who are in charge, not Brussels anymore. So what do you make of this attitude in Germany to this guy's arrest?
It's really interesting. I didn't know about it until you told me about it. But you mentioned AfD, Alternative for Deutschland. I mean, we're seeing similar movements growing in Ireland, and then the national media will paint or attempt to paint these movements as far right or fascist. Look, again, going way back to when we first began speaking, I haven't changed my mind on this, and I will if I ever see anything to convince me that I'm wrong. But immigration and the mass movement of people is one of the elite's great, great tools, Tony, isn't it? I mean, it is really. I mean, what we've seen in Germany is undoubtedly the response to Merkel's decision to allow 1 million people into the country. And I think for decades they've used immigration to divide people, to stoke unrest, but also to distract people from what's really going on. I mean, if I'm right, and I might not be right, this digital feudal system that I think is coming down the track, some would call it a technocracy, this is a wonderful distraction for it. All of these issues around Nazism and fascism and migrant flows. I mean, we're seeing it here in the UK. I don't have to tell you, but the media here, if you leave the BBC to one side, really, but even LBC, GB News, Talk TV, most of its editorial is taken up with issues to do with migration, isn't it? You'd agree with that. So it's never ending, really. So I see this as being just one great, great distraction. And it's something that is happening in lockstep, I think, Tony. Like I've already said, Ireland, but we know there are issues in Scandinavia. We know there are issues in other parts of Europe. And it saddens me, really, because conservatives who seemingly used to understand this, used to understand that the mass movement of people was a divide and conquer strategy, they seem to have forgotten it, Tony. I don't know what you think about that. They've forgotten the reason for it. And they've just gotten, they've thrown themselves headfirst into relentless social media wars about migration, a lot of which has a real tinge of xenophobia attached to it,
but it's also what it's done is it's happening on such a scale that it's undermining national identity, national culture, and also of course it's massively undercutting wages. So it of seems course. To me like the whole thing, I think it started, the small boats thing started when there was a seamen's strike. I don't know when that was, must be 2015 or something.
Yeah.
And then it all started, but it seems to me, it was around about the time of Brexit. So this is a sort of the European elite, I think, the mafia that runs Europe, saying, well, look, you know, never mind your Brexit, mate. We're going to be bringing in all these people anyway.
And here's the tragedy. Here's the tragedy. And I know I'm only repeating myself. People who used or who seemed to understand this are now back to full-on migrant blaming. I wouldn't dream of gaslighting people. Of course there have been problems with some young men who might have a very conservative view of, a conservative reading of their own religion, maybe. But nowhere near on the scale that some people are alleging. You know, this idea that migrants are rapists and all of this nonsense. And that really, really upsets me.
And also, what annoys me more than anything else, this is us both having a bit of a rant together about this and venting our spleen, is the way that the subject of so much of this is the migrants themselves. Nobody can blame them for wanting a better life. It's the mafias, mainly the Brussels-based and German mafias, that are bringing these people in to the country. Those are the people, but of course they're invisible, so you can't go and really kind of criticise them too much. But look, I want to also bring in a topic which I found absolutely weird and fascinating, which was this parade in Liverpool after the football victory, and the guy has just suddenly switched his plea from not guilty to guilty on all charges. Now, I watched the footage of that very closely when it happened, and all the various things being uploaded to social media, and you can piece together, if you take the time, what happened. He came round a corner in his car. He realised, Oh dear, I'm in the middle of a massive rally here and surrounded by drunk people. And he wasn't really sure what to do. He started to reverse. There were already people behind him. Whatever he did, he probably would have been better for him to just get out of the car and join the party. But what happened is there were some yobbos around him who were obviously drunk and started shouting at him. When he wound the window down and shouted back, they started kicking the car. They were really attacking him. They smashed the back window of the car. And of course, he's an army trained person, ex Royal Marine. He's reacting as if he's under attack. And so he went forward. He didn't kill anybody, but he was, to me, what should have happened there is the people who attacked his car should have been in the dock. But no, that didn't happen because most of them that on the film that I saw were ethnic minorities that may have played a part in all of this. And also, of course, he switching his plea at the last minute is almost certainly some kind of plea bargain. They said to you, right, well, we can cut your sentence down if you plead not guilty.
Yeah, it's very interesting this. Like everybody else, paid a lot of attention to it at the time. Very interesting and surprising somewhat that the guy's just copped to it and he'll be sentenced now in a couple of weeks' time. He'll get a lot of time in prison, I would imagine. They say though, the Crown says that the dash cam footage that they were able to obtain from his camera that was mounted on the inside of his car shows that they say he became agitated by the crowds and basically lost his temper and drove at them in a complete loss of control. And that his claim, because apparently he claimed after he was arrested that somebody came at him with a knife, they say that that couldn't be substantiated at all. But I'm kind of with you. The footage that is available to us shows before this guy drove erratically into people, showed his car being pushed and kicked and then smashed up. So yeah, it's a really strange one, this.
Yeah, listen,
And
if you're in the ex-army and someone smashes the back window of your car, they're kicking it, you open
yeah.
the door and someone kicks it. Listen, man. Anyway, so I just think this is
A strange case that, isn't it?
an obvious sort of, kind of miscarriage of justice. Maybe they should have brought some other people in on
Maybe
that
he should have
one.
better representation, maybe. Maybe his
Yeah,
representation is all wrong.
well, listen, you try and find an honest lawyer. That's not an easy ask, is it?
No, and I wonder, I don't know if you know this. Has he paid for his own barrister or is it legal aid? That
I
would
would
interest
imagine
me to
he's got
know.
his own lawyers, I would imagine, but even they get got at. Lawyers make a lot of money through bribes and that sort of, I mean,
Yeah.
they wouldn't call them bribes, unofficial conversations with the other side in the case, this sort of thing. I mean, we've also heard this idea of getting rid of juries. My God, this is David
Yeah.
Lammy, who's a Bilderberger. He's obviously on the road to stardom, and this seems to be his pièce de résistance to get rid of, basically tear up Magna Carta, Richie.
And who do you think told him to do that, Tony? You see, David Lammy couldn't add two and two together without counting on his fingers. In my opinion, David Lammy is as dumb a politician as has ever held a ministerial role in any government. I couldn't care less if people listening to this, if they start thinking racism or xenophobia, his skin colour's got nothing to do with it. Lammy is as thick as pig manure. He is as dumb as anything. Are we to believe that David Lammy dreamt up this idea of removing juries from pretty much all trials apart from murder and very violent offences? No, it's coming from elsewhere, Tony. And you hinted at it yourself with Bilderberg. Am I right in saying this idea originated in Scotland a couple of years ago, the Scottish Union for
Well,
Education? They're
look,
pretty smart
I'm not
people.
sure, but
Yeah, I
certainly
think so, yeah.
there is a
It's madness.
this
It's authoritarian.
the country is being run by other than people. So, I mean, I think we've basically got a fascist system. That is to say, it's a mixture of that and socialism, I suppose, to a certain extent through government. But it's private interests, private businesses, which are running things. And also, we really ought to, before we close, mention the BBC, because I as an ex reporter journalist there myself, I look at what's been happening to it as you know, playing into the hands of Rupert Murdoch. These private businesses, I look at the Daily Mail and particularly at the Murdoch Empire, which is spreading still into books and everything, of course, they're taking over cross-media ownership as so pro-Israel as to be off the scale. And
Yeah,
the
that's right.
BBC is, you know,
Ironically.
biased. Yeah, sure. And it's so they've had to put dodgy people in charge of it who are there not to run the BBC, but to sabotage it for people like Murdoch.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah. And look, you knew once the BBC bosses were hauled before MPs, you knew they wouldn't make any sort of real robust defence of what it is the BBC purports to do. To label the BBC as pro-Palestinian, here you and I speak a lot about Israel. On the genocide in Gaza, I actually, as a journalist, if I leave my own pro-Palestinian feelings to one side, and I can do that, I'm mature enough to do that. As a journalist, I look at the BBC and I applaud the BBC for what it's done. Because it has gone further than any other organization in reporting on the genocide. But to the credit of the BBC, it has bookended those reports constantly with Chippy Hotteveli appearing or some murderous commander from the IDF. The BBC has got its Israel coverage absolutely spot on in the last 3 years, in
Not
my
too
opinion.
bad, because you
Not too
notice
bad. Nothing to
all of the
apologize
bad
for.
things like cancelling this documentary, etc., were all
Yeah.
interventions from the top. Anyway, look, we
Of
haven't got any
course.
more time, Richie. I'm afraid we've got to run out of time.
Sadly.
So, can you please, in 30 seconds, just let listeners know where to find and follow you?
The best thing to do is go to my website, richieallen.co.uk. I'm on Twitter as BBGRichie. And please God, I'll be back broadcasting live Monday to Thursday from next week, where you will fairly often hear your very own Tony Gosling. Thanks for the opportunity today, pal. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, one of the few little spaces you'll find out there amongst the controlled opposition.
Thanks, T.
All right. Cheers, Richie.